You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Nadira Jamal, and welcome to episode 28 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. This episode is sponsored by Rock On Dance, providing belly dance classes in New Hampshire, Vermont, and online, as well as events, performances, and publications on the business side of belly dance. For more information, visit rockon.net, spelled R-E-Q-O-N.net. And if that sounds familiar, it should be, because Rock On is headed by Amity Elise, who's been a two-time Clubhouse guest. So she was our guest last month talking about taxes, and a little over a year ago talking about workshops. So you definitely want to check that out. The Clubhouse is a place where dancers can get together and geek out on all of those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want to get help with the what, so things like moves and choreographies, it's really easy to find resources. But if you want to get some information on the why and the how, so things like musicality, professionalism, culture, community, business, that can be a little bit trickier. So every month, I interview a different guest expert on a different topic. And we always have time for question and answer, so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, you are in the right place. And my guest today is another Nadira. So Nadira, my guest, is an accomplished dancer, teacher, and producer. She's the owner of Seven Cities Dance Studio and the producer of the East Coast Classic Belly Dance Festival in Hampton, Virginia. While she wears many hats, helping to build healthy dance communities is a source of much joy in her dance journey. You can learn more about Nadira at sevencitiesdance.com and about the East Coast Classic at eastcoastbellydance.com. And Nadira is going to talk about the role of the community in producing successful belly dance events. So thanks so much for coming, Nadira.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to geek out with you guys.
I'm so glad. First of all, like having a two Nadira call is like, you know, it's overload, right? How great is this going to have to be? So before we jump into our topic, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got started in belly dance?
I got started in belly dance about 15 years ago now. I had a friend who is Iranian who she said, "You are going to learn to belly dance." And she started to teach me to belly dance. And then I sought out other teachers in my local area and just started my dance journey. I fell in love.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about your background in producing events.
Producing events is something that I feel like is a very natural progression for a lot of people who are dancers in this way, and that you're like, wow, I really like doing this, but perhaps there aren't a lot of opportunities to do it. So you might start off organizing a hafla, and actually that was how I started. It was like a small hafla, and it was called the Benny Hafla because it was supposed to be all comedy. And we just had the best time ever, and we had dancers come and do like the everything but the kitchen sink belly dance with lots of props and, you know, just kind of having this fun time and let our hair down and enjoy ourselves. And so that was sort of like, wow, this is really fun. Our community really enjoyed it. And it kind of set me on the path, and I started to do, you know, sort of larger and larger profile events, culminating in deciding to produce the East Coast Classic.
So taking a look at our topic itself, you know, why is it important to engage the community when you're producing an event?
Well, producing an event is a risk. You're saying, hey, I have a vision, I have an idea. I think it could be great for the community. I think it's something that everyone could enjoy. But you don't know unless you're able to kind of take the temperature of the community. So if you don't have a healthy community, which means there's communication, then you don't know if people want your vision. And so a healthy community is super important because it helps you as a producer to know what the community wants and what they feel like they want to have in it.
And how can you go about getting the community involved?
There are lots of ways to get the community involved. The most important thing is yourself. Going out to the events, going to everyone's events, going to the hoflas, going to that workshop, you know, you should definitely find yourself at least once a month or at least once a quarter traveling to that other teacher's events, that's a great way to start, is being visible in your wider community.
I think that's a point that a lot of people miss, especially, you know, when you're performing professionally and, you know, thinking about things as a business. It's really easy to forget that, you know, even on the business end of belly dance, this is still, you know, a very small community, and your relationships with people make a really big difference. And so there's definitely this reciprocity piece that's involved.
Definitely.
So how can you get people to agree to participate in your event? How can you get them on board?
Well, now that you've gotten yourself involved and sort of seen what people are interested in, what styles of dance they're really interested in, maybe what artists they're really emulating, then once you kind of have that in place, then you come to them and say, hey, I have this idea, and because you have an understanding, because you're a participating member of the community, of what people are looking for, then you can present that to them, to the community, and say, hey, I see that we really like folkloric things. I was thinking of having a folkloric workshop or a folkloric themed hofla. And your community might respond more favorably because you took the time to see what their needs were.
So you're not coming to them from, hey, I want help with my event. It's, hey, this thing that I think you're going to really like is going to happen. Do you want this thing to happen based on your interests?
Yes.
Gotcha. And what kinds of things might you ask for help with?
Oh, my gosh. Our community is the best. I have gotten help with everything from making sure that the toilets are clean to taking the tickets and making sure that, we have the list of all the people who are supposed to be at the event, or stage managing. Like, it's a tremendous opportunity to work together. And it starts with saying, I need help. And you'll find that your community, if you're a healthy part of it and you're communicating, will really respond to, I need help. Because we all understand that no one can do all the things. It might look like I do all the things, but I really don't.
And, you know, once somebody has agreed to help, how do you make sure that they feel like they're really getting something out of it? How do you make sure that they leave that experience feeling like they made a difference and they got some benefit out of it themselves?
The most important thing is to use your voice and say, thank you. Say, I appreciate you. And, you know, I certainly do other things like, hey, you know, if you volunteer to take the tickets, I will have a wonderful discount for you on this workshop. Or, hey, you know, you volunteered for a certain number of hours, here's a free T-shirt as an appreciation, or, you know, access to certain things. Like, hey, you know, we're all going to go out to dinner or whatever. There's so many different ways that you can say thank you. You know, $20 gift certificate to the Sizzler for a volunteer, you know, whatever. But the biggest thing that will motivate people to want to volunteer and want to work with you is to have heartfelt gratitude for their contribution.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I've sometimes gotten out of helping too is almost like this friendship kind of quality. Not always with the organizer, because they're usually really hosed, but, you know, sometimes just hanging out with other dance friends while we're taking tickets, and, you know, not in the sense of like ignoring people who need your help, you know, but that not working, right? But sometimes just, you know, being on assignment with a classmate of mine, or, you know, meeting somebody new. And I can't remember which event it was, because it was a million years ago, but we actually had one meeting over lunch when we were doing the planning for it. And we had enough time at the meeting that we all just kind of hung out and talked after the business part of the meeting was over. And so it felt like I was out having lunch with my friends. And that was a really, it was just so satisfying to be there and to work with them, even, you know, after the nice lunch when we were just showing up to sweep the floor. It was like, oh, hey, how are you? So, you know, that piece of it was just so great.
That's awesome.
Now, one thing that you mentioned a little bit earlier was this idea of a healthy dance community. Why is it important?
Why is a healthy dance community important? Well,
yeah.
It's all about, for a few different reasons. Number one, it's more fun. When you have a healthy community, it's more fun. You have more dancers involved in each other's events, and each successful event creates another successful event. You have more access to, especially if you're bringing in teachers for workshops, you have more access to all of the student pool in the area because you're all congregating together. So when you put out those flyers, more people see them who might want to come and take part. Your shows are more well-rounded, which means they're more entertaining for you guys as dancers, but then also for the public to be able to see such a plethora of different styles. So a healthy community just really, it's like a flower opening toward the sun. And the sun being visibility.
And what makes a dance community healthy or unhealthy?
I have found that communication is health. When you don't communicate, the community becomes unhealthy because then, because of non-communication, people are not attending each other's events because they don't know about them, which, you know, makes the person who's organizing the event like, wow, you know, I put a lot of work in this. I wish there were more people who had come out. But because there wasn't healthy communication, people who may have really enjoyed what they had to offer didn't get a chance to come and be a part of it. So communication is really super duper important in a healthy community.
And what are some of the things that can get in the way of that?
Time, mostly. Time. We are all, so, you know, most of us are hobbyists. Most of us have day jobs and children and many other projects that we're working on. And so a lot of times what mostly gets in the way is time. And sometimes we forget, and myself included, forget to prioritize that community interaction when we're planning a show. We're like, well, I got to find the venue, and I got to get some dancers, and I got to find some lights. We forget about talking to the community, seeing what their needs are, seeing what their interests are, getting them involved. And so it's really time is the biggest factor, and it's something that we just don't prioritize it in our timelines. And then, of course, sometimes there are personality conflicts, you know, when people don't know each other well, they see each other in passing, and then maybe there's a scheduling conflict because there wasn't communication. And with someone that you never see, you know, it becomes, well, you know, this person decided to do this because she, you know, she really wanted to hurt my business when, you know, really it was just she didn't know. And that's really hard. But, you know, perhaps if you have some more communication, it helps to avoid those kinds of things.
And, you know, if your community isn't so healthy, what can you do about that?
Oh, there's so many great ways. One of the ways that our community wasn't unhealthy, we just lacked communication. One of the things that I tried to do and then just did was say, hey, you know what? It would be really nice if all of the people who are really heavily invested in the community with their time and dollars, like studio owners and current teachers and other event producers, got together maybe every 4 months and had some coffee, had a meal, had a chat. And that was the beginning of the Belly Council.
So tell us a little bit about your Belly Council. So what does it do?
Well, I wouldn't call it my Belly Council. It's the Hampton Roads Belly Council. And it is really just an opportunity for the professionals in our area to get together. And we do set an agenda, but it's not, you know, super rigid, but we do set an agenda just to kind of keep things moving. And the first thing we talk about is the schedule. Those events that are annual, that are already in the schedule, getting those out there and getting the flyers out to all of the other studios, professional dancers, and at all the other events that are happening. which really increases your chances of success. You're sitting with all the professional dancers and studio owners and event producers, and we're giving each other our flyers. And then we also talk about tentative events, like things that you would like to do, but you're looking for time in the calendar, or maybe you need a venue, or maybe you need volunteers. And that's the part where we say, well, what do you need help with? And then advertising. We advertise, you know, to each other, and we find different outlets for our advertising, which is really nice.
And how did you go about creating it in the first place?
I sat down with two other dancers in our area, and I said, you know, I think this could be something that's really good, and I think it'll help, increase communication. And I just put it out there, like, hey, we're going to meet at this restaurant at this time, and if you guys want to come out, here's what we're going to talk about. I like to send the agenda a little bit ahead of time so people can sign up, you know, just bring, get their flyers together, all that kind of stuff. And then I just kind of did it, which is kind of my, like, life motto. Like the belly dance Nike or something.
Well, and, you know, did you need to take any, like, legal steps in setting up the organization, or is it more of an informal thing?
It's super-duper informal. We rotate, like, who does the organizing of it, because we had looked at joining MECTA when it was still going, and some other, like, and we're still kind of looking into it, but it's something that I would really like. We have someone else in our community who's kind of looking into it and working on it, and I'm going to really be working closely with her to kind of bring that to fruition, or joining another organization like WMETA or Therese.
So you described, you know, this, you know, kind of informal, get the pros together over coffee and, you know, go through your standard agenda and talk and work things out model. What are some other models that people use for this kind of thing?
Well, there's the more like, as, you know, I sometimes forget, I do the belly dance thing all the time, so I'm using a little jargon. Things like MECTA or WMETA, which are like organized guilds for belly dance, is another way. Like it's much more like you pay a membership fee and then you're under the umbrella of this organization, and you will have an event under the umbrella of this organization all together in your community. And that's a fantastic structure. It will have a board of directors that can be elected as well. So those are other models that have some more structure to them. You can have just a light association, which is sort of maybe more like what we have, where you're like, well, we'll get together once a quarter and we'll chat, and maybe we'll rotate, you know, who organizes the restaurant or whatever. There's definitely a lot of different ways that you can go about, you know, getting things organized depending on what the temperament of your community is.
It seems like another kind of question in this is, you know, is this primarily for the professionals? Is it primarily for the community as a whole, et cetera? I know that in some areas there have been pushes to have actual unions, which obviously are for the people who are, you know, making money at this as opposed to everybody who's interested in dancing. So it sounds like, you know, who is it for and what do you want to accomplish is going to be one of the big questions you have to answer.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, for, and also, like, and actually I was thinking this, but I didn't say it. For our area, because Hampton Roads is sort of a hub for the military. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of people that move in and move out. So having something that, you know, has like a board of directors and a very strict timeline can be a little difficult when people's families get pulled out of the community and into the community quite quickly because of the military. So there can be other factors that sort of decide like how strict the structure can be.
That's a really good point. So if somebody wanted to start their own council, you know, of this type more or less, what steps should they take?
Get together with, if you can find two other dance instructors and start talking, that can be the beginning. I actually was really fortunate because I had put my some notes online about how to start a belly council, and Andy Pizzuala, she's out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She used those notes to start a belly council in Louisiana. And it was just setting an agenda. The one thing that is a little strict, because I know this all sounds very loose, is that I like to limit it, and your mileage will vary, to people who are currently teaching classes, someone who owns a dance studio, or someone who produces at least one event a year, depending on the size of your area and what people are doing. For our area, which is sort of a medium metro area, that was good because it brought about 15 people to the table. You don't want it to be too big, and you do want to kind of not limit it, but you want to make sure that the voices that are being heard are the ones that can bring the most impact to the community.
That's a really good point. You might have very vocal performers who aren't necessarily going to be event producers, and if they're not in that space, then they're not necessarily going to be as helpful in setting that up.
Well, and you just don't want a meeting longer than 2 hours. You know, if you can do it, a 2 hour time limit, I feel like it's the most you can spend and be productive. But if you can do it in an hour, make it work. I also, as a service to the community, have HunterModesBellyDance.com, which is, it's free. It's not free. I pay for the web hosting and I pay for someone to maintain it. But it is all the classes, all the events. I don't care. It's awesome. Send it to me. It will be on there. That's a nice enticement. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about enticement. It's a nice enticement to get people to the table because they're like, wait, you're going to put up a free listing for me because I came to a meeting and talked about things I'm passionate about? Totally.
We've talked about who to invite. What other steps do people need to take?
Come with an open mind. Come with an open mind. Just be ready to, you know, because a lot of times if you're coming out of a period of not having a lot of communication, sometimes just seeing that other dancer that you've only heard about can be a little stressful. So come with an open mind and with the desire to increase support and collaboration in the community and have a clear, this is what success looks like for this quarter.
Can you give us some examples of what success might look like depending on what the goals of your group are?
So for our first meeting, our goals were to increase collaboration in the community. What does that look like? That looked like each person who was at that council meeting was to attend someone else's event in the next 3 months. That was it. You know, it was something real, something tangible, and it was something that was, you know, doable. Like, okay, the next 3 months, each person here will be at someone else's event. And it was incredible. Like, the growth our community started experiencing, and then people were like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. She brought all her students to my event, and it was so much more awesome with all these more people there. Yay! And that really was like a match.
And that it really is so reasonable. I mean, like, you know, if you're not paying attention to your schedule, it might not happen, but showing up to one event run by somebody else once every 3 months is really totally doable, unless you're in a community that's so small where nobody else is putting on events.
Right.
And in that case, you don't need counsel, do you?
And for the most part, it's not that people were like, well, I'm not going to her event. It's just that they didn't think of it. And the minute they just were like, oh, okay, one time in 3 months, I'm going to – and a lot of times it meant that they would wind up going to more than once, you know, every 3 months. But just thinking about that and seeing what that means in your event and in another person's event, man, it was just fantastic.
Now, another thing you mentioned a little while ago was this idea of an agenda. How do you go about creating one and what kinds of things might be on it?
Well, I know It depends on what your community makeup is. If your community has a lot of professional dancers that are teaching in terms of like they're gigging quite a bit, or there is a teacher who is a trainer of the dancers who gig quite a bit, increasing paid gigs, fantastic thing to put on an agenda. It'll bring that teacher to the table because she wants to be a voice for her professional dancers who are gigging. Or she may, you know, she may also be doing a lot of gigs as well. So increasing paid gigs. And I know, so it's funny because when I called around to our dancers who were doing a lot of pro gigs, I was like, let me see your rates. Just bring them with you. And they were like, what? Like, I mean, I don't care what you're charging. I just want other people to know because of the communication. And I wind up using Samira Sharuk's rates by regions because no one would tell me how much they charge. It was like a secret. So I wind up using Samira Sharuk's rates by region, which is a wonderful resource, and she's a wonderful dance professional. And using that, which was nice because it was sort of like, in this part of the country, this is how much it is for XYZ. And so that can be a nice way to bring people to set an agenda and say, we're going to talk about how to increase paid gigs. Because a lot of times talking about money and negotiating for fair wages is not something that these dancers have ever tried to do. And that also kind of leads into, if you have something that's a difficult issue, just because there's no knowledge about it, this can be a great time to bring in a guest speaker. Which I have done. It really helps to bring people to the table. And I try to bring somebody, Madame Ansel wasn't able to be on the call because she's actually teaching at TribalCon right now. but she's an amazing dance professional who knows a lot of the business of belly dance. And she was interested in coming to our area and speaking on that. And so it's short. It's, you know, maybe they'll speak for 15 minutes, but it's a nice time for dancers to ask questions. Well, how do I talk to this venue owner about how much I deserve to be paid, or you know what my rate is, and so that can be a nice, you know, it's an easy way to set an agenda because increasing paid gigs is something that most of us all want, and then bring in a guest speaker to talk about it, someone who's, you know, maybe a little bit geographically farther away and is respected a little as an expert on this or who might know a little bit more, is a great way to set your agenda and get people on board.
Can you give us some examples of the different topics that you've had guest speakers talk about? Because I'm really intrigued by this idea.
Well, I know that when we had Ansa, we had her talk about how every successful event creates another successful event. And what does that mean? Well, every time that someone has an event that does well and financially breaks even more and makes more, breaking even is not the goal, then she's able to do another event. Or he is able to do another event. And so how to market what you're doing to the people who would be interested in it, to be able to have successful events. Super important. Because if the events are not successful, then they stop happening.
All right, so what else might you have on the agenda?
I like to put, like, if you would like to have a more strict structure, so, hey, for next time, let's, you know, Susie Q, Matthew, whoever, I need you guys to do a little research and find out what's out there in terms of organizations that we can already join. Because we got together, we ate, we worked through our agenda, and this was really fun. So for next time, putting that on the agenda is nice. Figure out some, whether it's Wilmita or TRS or whatever. Also, putting on their advertising in advance is put that on the agenda. So just so that they know to bring their because if you don't say advertising is on the agenda, sometimes teachers, they won't bring their flyers with them. And then having those tentative events on the agenda can be really helpful because we do, and the biggest thing about, you know, limiting the people who are sort of invited is for time, but also because a lot of times you don't want to kind of put out there that you're thinking of having this, you know, XYZ big name dancer because everything's not in place. You didn't find a venue yet, you know, whatever. It becomes a safe place to talk about what you want to do in the future and get help with it. There's been plenty of times where someone, a teacher or a producer has come and said, I really want to do this thing, but I don't have a venue. And that dance professional that's sitting next to her at the meeting goes, oh, well, I know this venue that's really easy to work with. And you know what? Why don't I introduce you to them? And then they have a venue.
All right. So far as agenda things, we've talked about, you could talk about raising rates. You could talk about the schedule, time for advertising, any like organizational to-dos. Is there anything else that people might want to consider having on their agenda on a regular basis?
Ending things on a positive note is something that you want to have on your agenda. You want to end things on a positive note. So you want to have discussed the goals to be reached by the next meeting, whether it's once every 3 months, please go to someone else's event, whether it's attempt to use these rates by region for our region to negotiate contracts with a venue owner. Whatever it is that you are trying to reach as a goal, just have it in the agenda and have it sort of clearly defined in what sort of success looks like. And then make sure to close with a really positive sentiment. Mm-hmm. Oh, and have set time limits for each speaker, for each point of the agenda.
That's a good idea.
An egg timer is very, very useful. And a moderator who presents each point of the agenda.
And does the moderator have to be the organizer, or does
it
have to have somebody else in that role?
Yeah, I prefer it to not be me. If I'm organizing the meeting, I prefer it to be someone else. Just that says increasing paid gigs, increasing the number of paid gigs, or increasing the price for the region, because maybe it's been depressed for some time, whatever that is, then the moderator would present that, and then each dancer would say, this has been my experience, this is where I am, this is where I'd like to go in the future, and you take notes on what that person says. But the moderator would go, okay, now we're done with Matthew, and on to Hannah, and then Hannah would say, well, this is my experience, this is where I am, this is where I'd like to go.
Leads me to another question is, you know, are there particular roles that an organization needs to have filled? We mentioned the moderator.
Secretary is really nice.
And what would a secretary do?
The secretary would have the egg timer to make sure that all the time is being used wisely. And this is very sort of, you know, relaxed and sort of, but at the very least, to kind of keep things moving, a secretary who just sort of monitors the time, and you just say, you know, it's maybe 2 minutes per person, or, you know, you can keep it flexible, but just like a short, you know, say whatever it is you want to say. And then the moderator, so then the moderator isn't setting timers. She can just concentrate on moving from, you know, presenting the question and then getting responses from each of the people that are present.
Are there any other roles that folks should think about having in their own councils?
You will find that your mileage will vary, but finding like yourself and two other people for the beginning is really manageable. And then you may find that you need to have a person who just writes the notes of the meeting, of what was said, puts down any major points. A person who collects all the information in terms of the websites for the events to put them on to the Hampton Roads Belly Dance site. So those are roles that will definitely come along probably later, may not be the first meeting. But if you know, have people who are like super excited and ready to go, those can be important roles too, having somebody who sort of writes all the minutes of the meeting, what was said, any sort of, well, we all decided we were going to do this, making sure to write that down, and then another person who gets all of the web social media information to update the website with the current schedule.
And you know, what are some of the common mistakes that dancers make when they try and set up an organization like this?
I actually think, and I know it sounds like, wow, they just kind of sit around and like eat lunch and maybe have a glass of wine every 3 or 4 months. and that does happen, and that's a huge part of what we do, is because the most important thing is don't go too broad or don't try to do too much. If the point of a belly council or an organization is that you all communicate with each other, the fact that you are all sitting down together with that other dance professional is great. It's okay if you don't make it through every point of the agenda. It's okay if it's, well, we just kind of got around, we had coffee and we kind of chatted and they gave me some flyers. That's a great first effort. You know, that was definitely something I know when I first get started with this, I was like, we're going to do this and we're going to accomplish this. And that was really a lot. If I had it to do over again, I would keep it really loose, really informal, because the most important thing is forming connections and relationships with the other dancers in your area. Because from that, communication will follow. And from that communication, the health of your region will increase.
So how would you deal with personality conflicts within the organization? I know that in some dance communities where things are not particularly healthy, sometimes there are like downright feuds.
Oh, yes.
Like different camps of the teacher and that teacher, and it can be nasty. You know, how do you make sure that everybody's included but things stay civil and productive?
So, yes, and I'm actually really glad that you talk about this, because a lot of what I do is just, you know, I am a really positive person, but oh, trust me, I have met and worked with all the personality types, including my own, and we all bring who we are to the table. So one of the biggest things about when you're able to get together is just seeing that, like, there is not a Gorgon on the other end of the table. It's just another woman, small-owned business owner. It's just another passionate artist. And when we create this other, a lot of times students are created by otherness, like she's other. She's done something horrible, and now she's other. Because then we can say, well, that person isn't like me. And what that looks like, sort of boots on the ground in terms of, like, this is what this really looks like, is a lot of times that teacher, she would not be caught dead in the same room with XYZ. But if there's something where other dance professionals are meeting, she doesn't want to be excluded or feel like she's other people are doing something and she's not in on the know. So what she will frequently do, and what you can initiate if you're organizing this, is to have one of her dedicated students. This would be sort of someone who is teaching a class maybe for her or subbing for her. So they are still a part of the community. Like, they sub for her, they teach her class. Maybe they're doing a lot of pro gigs under her umbrella. That would be the person that you would say, hey, would you like to come to this meeting? So that way that teacher has the information. And then that student, that dedicated student, maybe she's a, you know, subbing, or maybe she's doing a lot of pro gigs or whatever, she's going to bring information about what the teacher is doing in terms of events, because she doesn't want to miss out on that opportunity. She's going to send it with the student. You'll be able to get her flyers and see what her schedule is. And, you know, so it's as long as there's communicating, this is still working. So that's the way I deal with feuds.
Well, what if you've got two people who are, you know, in the organization, but they are still kind of in this, like, adversarial position? And, you know, I haven't been with this in a council situation, but I've been in this in other situations, and, like, you can feel the tension between them in the room. Is there any way that, you know, you as the moderator or the organizer can, you know, help diffuse that, or at least make sure that it doesn't impact the group?
Absolutely. And I have found, I won't get too far into it, but I have had some very interesting situations. I was invited to be in another area, and it was like, oh my gosh, you know. And I was like, hey, you know, the most important thing is to address it head on. And that can mean opening the meeting with, I know that there are a lot of different personalities and a lot of different sides to what we do, but we all respect each other. And as long as we all respect each other, we can all communicate and all really increase the effectiveness of our community. I have also found in extreme cases, if you offer those elements that are feuding something that they really want, they will get themselves together. Whether that be a position on a thing that you're doing, or a space in a hootenanny, who knows. But generally, if you offer people something that they really want, they will act like grown-ups and get themselves together.
And, you know, are there any circumstances under which you might have to kick somebody out?
I know, for me, that's just so not my jam. I'm like, I'm very inclusive. I really, you know, of course I want everyone to play well together. But what I have found is that, like, if that person, if we come back to the meeting in the next 4 months and for the next quarter, and that person hasn't met the goal of going to one person's event in 3 months, one other person's event in 3 months, they're not going to show up to the meeting because they haven't done the thing. They haven't met the goal. What I have found is that I don't ever need to, like, kick people out of things or, you know, go negative, because really people self-select for what their interests are and for what is important to them. And so generally, if it's not their jam, they just won't come. And if, you know, they won't come, but they'll send that dedicated student because they don't want to miss out on the information. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's for the best. If there's two personalities that just can't get along, and one person is attending and able to contribute in a healthy way and the other person just is not, sometimes it's better to have that dedicated student there bringing us the information and then taking the information back, because it's the communication is still happening. But yeah, I have found that mostly people self-select for whatever it is they want to do.
Now, you know, when you have an organization like this, you know, my impression is that usually, you know, the leadership ends up going to whoever it is that started it just by default, because that's usually the person who's willing to get stuff done. How do you go about making sure that everybody's happy with the leadership, whether it's a question of who's doing it or what the leadership role looks like, you know, kind of in the long term?
I have been rotating. I was like, you guys, I'm super busy. You guys are all awesome. This is something that our community is, like, very robust, and people talk, and, you know, someone will just phone someone up and have a chat, which is really nice. Hey, other amazing dance professionals, you see how it's done. You see how I set the agenda, and you might, you know, have, like, a little coffee with her one-on-one. Like, here's how this is the way I decide the agenda. these are the, you know, two people. You can rotate different jobs, like who's going to be the secretary and who's going to be the moderator, but putting the responsibility for it as something that goes around the group, who, you know, rotating who finds the restaurant, who, you know, makes the calls, is really nice because it gets people more invested. It also means that if there is a, that because everyone gets a chance, if someone's like, well, I don't really like her, well, it'll be someone else and at the next meeting. It could be you.
All right. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want to talk about?
I mean, I guess I could talk a little bit about the East Coast Classic, just a teeny tiny touch.
Absolutely.
I am so excited about the East Coast Classic for 2016. We, our first major headliner that I'm willing to announce is Jelena Carlano. She's very fabulous. It's going to be bananas. And, you know, basically I have a festival that is, it's a festival, but it's really a big party. And we have such an amazing time. And the growth that we've experienced just by having a really healthy community that has come together and supported this event because they wanted it. They wanted it, and they have made it amazing. And so just having more people from outside of the state of Virginia coming to the really the only large belly dance festival in the state of Virginia, it's just been an incredible opportunity, and I really would love to continue to see the event grow and be a resource for dancers all over the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. And how can people get more information on that if they want to go?
They can go to eastcoastbellydance.com, and you'll see a marker page. And registration opens March 15th.
That is so soon.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
And actually, if we think about the East Coast Classic as kind of a case study, can you tell us about, you know, what your community strategy was?
Excuse me?
Can you tell us a little bit more about your strategy for engaging the community for this event specifically?
I did not do anything for the East Coast Classic without talking to my community. Do you want this event? This is what my vision is. How does that impact what your vision is and what you would like? And when those two things are on the same page, your event is going to be successful.
And how do you feel about asking that? Were you talking to people in person or surveying?
At the Belly Council. The Belly Council can be such a tremendous tool for you as a producer to be in front of your target audience. If what you're doing, and I have some things that are very much about engaging the general public with belly dance, but the East Coast Classic is about having other belly dancers from all over the country and now the world. We had competitors from Quebec and Puerto Rico and a winner from Spain. But it's about sort of saying, hey, I want to do this thing. Do you want this thing? And I get to stand in front of all the dance teachers, other studio owners, and the producers of other events and pitch my vision. It's a tremendous opportunity. And it's a great way to ensure that your event looks like what your community wants.
And then when you get to the asking for help stage, what did that look like for this event?
I come to that Belly Council meeting that's like about a month out, depending on where it falls in the calendar, because we only meet every 4 months, sometimes even less, it's fine. But I come with volunteer sign-up sheets. I come with volunteer sign-up sheets. Like, hey, how are you? You can take this back to your students and have them fill it out and come back with it. Also, because once you start communicating and you've got that person who's taken down those websites and all of the, like, where are all the events happening, it means that you now have their email, and you can just email them and be like, hey, I'm looking for volunteers for this. Or you can have a Facebook group. And so increased communication back to that sort of increase in the communication. It makes all the things possible for volunteers, for knowing what kinds of workshops to have. It's kind of everything. The talking, the communicating.
It brings me to kind of an interesting question is, you know, you mentioned a Facebook group. It seems almost like Facebook is this double-edged sword because we all get to talk so much more often when we're in a Facebook group. But I think a lot of times because we're doing that, we don't take the time to see each other face-to-face.
Yes.
Except, like, if you're at a gig when you're, like, rushing to get your makeup on and all this stuff. You know, where do you think is the right balance to help the community function in a healthy way?
I think that Facebook can be wonderful for sort of at a glance, oh, this is what's happening next weekend. I have often checked my, you know, my VA Belly Dancers Facebook page, like, oh, that's the thing that's happening. So it can be wonderful to give you kind of an at-a-glance look at what's happening in the community. It can be a great way to also give kudos and congratulations to somebody who's working really hard, had a really great event, or just to, you know, put out some articles on your body and belly dance, or, you know, something that has to do with, like, you know, musicality or something. You find this great article and you want to share it. Well, while it might be cool to call up every person that, you know, a belly dance and tell them about this article, you know, being able to provide a link to it in a Facebook group, something that addresses, you know, what you do and what these other people do because they're in the group, can be really nice. So that sort of, like, instant communication to a large group of people is really nice. But you are very right in that it does not preclude the personal touch of sitting next to someone and really sharing your heart in terms of, you know, we do this because we love it. And these events are certainly about bringing incredible amounts of talent, like if you're in a workshop situation or a festival situation, or, you know, allowing a space for students to have a place to dance, you know, whatever it is your goals are. So I definitely think there's a, you can do both of the things. You can have a Facebook presence and you can have a every 4 months we get together face to face. And both of those things are really important.
And, you know, do you find that it's harder to get people to get on board with, you know, these face-to-face meetings that they have to, like, get up and go to when everybody kind of feels like they can talk anything out on Facebook?
Well, for, and I have, I don't know, this is our community. We, by and large, we don't discuss anything that would be considered sensitive or tentative on Facebook. Because that makes no sense. Whereas if something is sensitive, it still needs to be addressed. It still needs to be discussed, but it's certainly not something that we would discuss on the internet.
Well, you know, in this day when you can have, like, private Facebook groups and stuff, I think sometimes people just kind of move there. Maybe this is the Boston thing because we're all a bunch of geeks. But, you know, it's like, why meet face-to-face when you can talk on Facebook? And it really isn't the same thing.
People get – people just say really randomly things when they're communicating on the internet. There is a measured way that we speak to each other in person that we just don't. So even if it's a closed group – being able to have that rapid fire, nobody has to, like, take a second. I have not found that to be fantastic for the community in terms of dealing with a really sensitive topic.
So maybe that's just an angle that we need to push when we try and make the case for meeting in person.
I do make the case for meeting in person. And when, you know, on the rare occasions that maybe something has sort of popped up, I make it clear, and that's just a personal choice, that it is not absolutely not something I would discuss on the internet. But please feel free to call me. We can chat it up on the phone. We can meet for coffee. I try to stay really available and approachable.
All right. Well, I think we've covered some good things. Before we open up to questions, is there anything else you want to touch on?
No, I think that's it. I hope that you guys have enjoyed hearing me and, you know, my sort of journey toward a healthy community, and that anything that I have said could be of any use to you guys in your communities. Thank you so much for giving me this forum to talk about such an important issue.
My pleasure personally, and I'm sure everybody else feels the same way. Now, you know, if people take one thing away from this call, what should that be?
Your healthy community starts with you. Be the change you want to see.
And if people want to learn more from you, how can they do that?
They can find me on the internet. You can find me at Nadira Seven Cities Dance on Facebook. You can also find me on Twitter, Seven Cities Dance. That's a number 7 on Twitter. You can find me. You can email me, Nadira@sevencitiesdance.com, and I am super available. Like, if you email me, I will totally email you back, and I'd love to dialogue and have conversation with dancers from all over the country. So, yeah, I'm Nadira@sevencitiesdance. Go ahead and send me an email, Nadira@sevencitiesdance. Find me on Facebook, Seven Cities Dance. Find me on Twitter. I'm on all the things. Or just, you know, come up and give me a hug at an event. I'll be the one with the crazy wig on.
All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and open up for questions? So those of you who are listening to the webcast, you can use the little question box on the right-hand side. If you're on the phone or Skype, you can press ** to unmute yourself and ask a question. And if you are on the webcast and listening through your computer, if you've got a microphone, you can also unmute yourself using the little microphone icon. So if you have a question, again, that's ** to unmute, or you can go ahead and type that in. And if you don't have a question, I would also love to hear what your favorite takeaway from the call is. So don't be shy. Somebody's got to go first. Hi there. Hi, I see somebody unmuted.
Oh, this is Hava.
Hi, Hava.
Hi. I was wondering, if this isn't off topic, how to increase community health within the classroom, and also how has a healthy community helped your own dancing?
Healthy communication in the classroom is so important. I think, thank you so much for asking that question. That's a wonderful question, because of course, as an instructor, you want to make sure that your classes are communicating effectively, and that it's the way that the communication is happening isn't impeding their learning potential. So one of the ways of having and I was actually just talking to Don Mejia about this, is about sort of increasing the nonviolent communication. There's great articles about that. And making a safe space for students to have questions and comments that are respected, but that doesn't take away from instructional time. So for me, what that looks like in my classroom is, we're at the end of class. We've done our cool down. Did anybody have any lingering questions or concerns? And really taking that moment to really listen and say, oh, I really hear what you're saying, or I can see that. So that each person feels heard, but it's in a almost like a mini belly council way, in terms of like we're all sort of having this moment where input is important and respected, but it's not taking away from the class time. And the other question about, I think I may have forgotten the other question. What was the other question?
How has healthy community contributed to your own development as a dancer? How has it affected you, your dancing?
Oh, gosh. For me, being able to collaborate with the other dancers in our area, in terms of just like the collaboration of speaking to each other and communicating, has really, it has made me come to the stage with a level of love and respect for my fellow dancers, and that people see me when I, if I'm dancing as a soloist, or they see my troupe or whatever. But a lot of times what I'm thinking, because of the that community and communication aspect, is that you're seeing me on this stage, but I represent all of these other people who have come together to either create the opportunity for me to be on stage, or supported me by being there in the audience, or, you know, like sort of kind of like that idea of generations.
Thank you for such a loving presentation and answer.
Thank you. So sweet.
Tava, if you have any more questions, now's a good time to ask. If not, I'll mute you again.
I'm not sure if I can be heard.
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. No, that's all for me right now. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks, Tava. That was a good question. I'm going to go ahead and put you on mute. And if anybody else would like to ask a question, you can press star to unmute yourself or type it in on the question box at left. And again, I would love to hear folks' favorite takeaways from the call as well. Okay, that might just be it. I'm going to start my little closing speech, but if you do think of any questions, feel free to interrupt me. Thank you so much, Nadira.
Thank you. This has been amazing.
I love this one. It's so much fun to say Nadira to somebody else.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'd also like to give a special thanks to our sponsor, Rock On Dance. So don't forget to check out their selection of belly dance classes in New York, Vermont, and online, as well as their events, performances, and publications on the business side of belly dance. You can find more information at rockon.net. spelled REQ-ON.net. And thanks, everybody, for coming. This is the end of our call, but that doesn't mean that the conversation has to end. We've got a private Facebook group just for Clubhouse members, and I'll send out an email shortly with an invitation to that group. Do be aware that there is an approval delay because it's a private group. So after you request to be added, it may take a day or two for us to add you. And that email will also include the call recording in case you want to listen in and pick up on anything you missed, a link to Nadira's resources, and I'm also going to include a link to our feedback survey. I run the Clubhouse, but it's for all of us, so I'd really like to hear what topics, speakers, or improvements you'd like to see. And our next call is going to be on Thursday, March 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern. My guest is Katayoon Hudson, who will talk about how to tell when you're ready to teach. So whether you're teaching already and you have students who are thinking about making the leap, whether you're thinking about making the leap, whether you just made the leap and you weren't sure it was a good idea, right? All of these things we're going to touch on. And the last thing that I want to say is that this is the come on in kind of Clubhouse, not the no boys allowed kind. So if you know somebody who would like to join us, you can invite them at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And until next time, happy dancing. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. It's been a joy. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. For more Geektacular resources, check out bellydancegeek.com.